Hey, what's your secret?
One of my best friends in middle school and I, we were learning about Egypt in history class, and we were learning about King Tut. And we kind of made this inside joke, and we said, you know, it would be really funny if someday we get tattooed that said Tut. So we each have a Tut in common. Fast forward to the end of college, he was going away to the military, we threw a party, and somebody happened to show up with a party with a tattoo gun. I had never tattooed before in his life. Next thing you know, I found myself pants down, laying on my dining room table, getting tattooed on my ass cheek. Jared and I, to this day, have a toot in common.
Oh. Hi, my name is Spencer. My secret is I fled my home country when I was a kid. I don't tell anyone why or how.
But today he'll share a remarkable story of cunning and determination when he was coming of age in the late 80s.
I was 16 when this secret took place, yeah.
There was unrest in the country where he lived.
You know, honestly, people were getting blown up and people were getting hurt every day.
Did you witness any violence?
Yeah, I did.
His family was deeply rooted in the conflict.
And that's one of the things I wasn't sure I should talk about, but hey, we're going to do it now.
Okay.
My family was involved. I'll be watching the news, and I would see the person wanted on the news sitting in my living room.
Oh my gosh.
We weren't supposed to talk about it.
They were dysfunctional, too.
My family wasn't very affectionate. They would say, oh, he's a stupid f***er.
And at this tender age, he knew he had to leave hearth and home.
I was saving money for this plan. This plan was in the works. I had everything in place.
Today, Spencer joins me to reveal his secret, the bold and complex steps he took to flee, and whether or not he was able to pull it off.
I'm excited to be here. I'm not totally sure I want to tell it.
Oh, no.
Well, we're here now. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. If you have any misgivings at the end, you let me know.
Okay.
Okay.
This is The Secret Room, a podcast about the stories no one ever tells. I'm Ben Hamm.
Okay, so you're recording?
I'm recording, yeah.
Okay, great. So I'm just going to start the show now.
Okay. Okay, let's do it.
Okay, here we go. Hi, Spencer. It's Ben.
Hi, Ben.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I was really, really amazed when I got your secret, and I'm so glad you're here to share it with us.
Yeah, I think, well, we're here now. Okay. Let's do it.
Let's roll back to the beginning. We know your secret happened when you were a kid.
Yeah.
What city were you growing up in Northern Ireland?
So I grew up in a town just south of Belfast.
And what was it like there?
It was in the 80s and the 90s. There was some troubles going on, you know. People were getting hurt and there was unrest. I mean, I do remember running out of a shopping mall because of a bomb scare.
Oh my gosh.
I do remember seeing British soldiers on the street with guns who would point them directly at you.
Mm.
You know, they're definitely a different time.
Right. Can you give us a quick summary of what was going on between Northern Ireland and Great Britain at the time?
So the quick story is there was a revolution in Ireland in the 20s, and Eamon de Valera was one of the leaders, and the other one was Michael Collins. And Michael Collins went to Britain to negotiate peace for Ireland, and he came back with a deal that he thought was good. He got 26 of the 32 counties back. The rest of the six was going to be continued to be run by Britain. Well, the other side didn't like that, and it caused a civil war, where Michael Collins was actually killed in that war. And then they moved on with his plan, which is the six counties in Northern Ireland were continued to be owned by Britain. But there's an Irish organization called the IRA that didn't like the idea of Britain owning part of Ireland. And so there's been unrest. They're at peace now, but there's lots of years where a lot of people were getting killed and there was a lot of hate and anger.
How was your family involved with that?
Well, my family was definitely on the Republican side, which is the IRA side. My family had some deep connections, especially my mom. We were told to hate the British, but it wasn't in my heart to hate the British. And I didn't, because they had families too. And I would say things like, you know, they've got families and they've got people at home and I can't hate them just because of this thing. That caused a little bit of conflict in my family with me, for sure. But I can tell you that I know what it's like as a small child to have a gun pointed in my face.
Wow.
Because the British soldiers at the border were very tense and very anxious and,
wow,
you know, they didn't play around. You know, honestly, people were getting blown up and people were getting hurt every day.
Did you witness any violence yourself?
Yeah, I did. I did. I went to a funeral a few times, and it was common, I guess, at the time. I wouldn't say it was common, but it happened. If there was an IRA funeral or a British funeral, lots of people who are opposing you are collected in one place, so there'd be some riots or some violence happening at those funerals. I did see people come in fighting and shooting, and I was a very small child, like 7, 5. I remember seeing a riot one time on a street where my uncles were getting hit in the head, and they talked about it like battle wounds, like they had fought the war and they had their marks on their head. And my cousin, who was 10 years old, got hit in the head by a policeman's baton. So a lot of aggression, a lot of violence.
That must have been a really, I mean, it would be a difficult environment for anybody, but just as a kid, that must have been very confusing for you and probably still affects you today.
It's not something that was fun to live around and see, so I want to be different. I want to be a person of peace and a person of love and a person of kindness. I had a normal childhood too. We had Christmas. We rode bikes down to the river. I don't want to make it sound like I was living in some war-torn area where we were hiding like Terminator 2 in the like sewers. You know, we get normal stuff too and played in the field outside the house. But there was this other underlining theme where, you know, you knew was there. But definitely there was a lot more anger and violence, I think, than a kid should be seeing.
Did you tell me when we were talking before, did your family help people escape?
And that's one of the things I wasn't sure I should talk about, but hey, we're going to do it now.
Okay.
My family was involved in the Republican side, and my house was in the network of safe houses. So when somebody was on the run, they would be in our house. I'd be watching the news, and I would see the person wanted on the news sitting in my living room.
Oh my gosh.
And we just weren't supposed to talk about it.
Wow.
Uncle John would come for a few days. Uncle Mick, Uncle Rory, Uncle... We always called him uncle. I never really got that. My mom had a big family, but I knew they weren't uncles. My family personally knew someone named Sean McStevon, who was a IRA leader who lived in our town.
Wow.
He was on the run to the point of when he died, the LA Times featured because they found him when he died, I guess.
Oh my gosh.
We knew him as a person that was just a neighbor.
What did you think about these people from the news showing up at your house?
Well, they were very quiet and calm when they were at our house, but I knew there was something wrong. You know, there was something in the pit of my stomach that was like, I'm watching a news article or a news thing about some bombing and so many people died and so many people were hurt. And this is him right here, sitting right behind me.
Wow.
There was a pit. There was something wrong. And, you know, sometimes I expressed my concern that was met with a lot of unhappiness. Again, I was supposed to hate the British, which was not in me to hate in that way.
You said that that caused some conflict within your family. Can you describe that conflict?
Yeah, you know, my mother was very, very gung-ho in the Republican side and the hate of British. We couldn't even own Reebok shoes because I don't know if you're aware, but the Reebok shoes have a British flag on them. I am a teeny bit opinionated. So even at that age, and so I would say things like, I can't just hate these people. My mother was a little bit controlling. She couldn't really control me in that way, so it definitely caused conflict. At an early age, I wanted to get away.
Wow. Did you have any siblings?
Yeah, I had 6 siblings.
Oh, wow.
I was a boy after 5 boys. They were all older, so I was the baby.
Right.
And so I was...
Wow, the youngest of 6. That's amazing. Big family.
I hear that I was supposed to be a girl, you know? She was trying for the girl, but it just didn't work out.
Right.
You know, I hear, of course, I don't remember, but I heard the first words that were uttered to me when I came out was another fucking boy. But of course, I don't remember, but that's what I was told.
So Spencer, to this point, you've described an amazing, you know, environment that you're growing up in. At some point, you started to realize that this was not for you, right?
Oh, yes. Very early.
What was it specifically that made you want to leave?
I don't think it was really the violence and the aggression and the hate. You know, there were certain ways that my family behaved. Like if you would come up to the car, they would say, "Hey, Ben, good to see you. Nice weather. We love having you here." And the second you walked away, they would say, "Oh, he's a stupid fucker." That bothered me a lot. And then my family wasn't very affectionate. I like people to be kind and uplifting to each other. And I knew that at a young age, and I knew I wanted it. And it just wasn't at home. It wasn't there. Do you remember when these things called encyclopedias used to exist?
Yes.
If you opened Encyclopedia under you, under United States, where there was a map there, I had taken a red pen and I had traced out this very elaborate plan how I was going to get across the United States to Hollywood and make it big.
Wow. Okay. Goodness.
I had a plan from like 12, 13. I was having these extravagant plans.
That's amazing.
Ireland is very thin country. It's only like 180 miles wide.
I've been there. It's beautiful.
Oh, cool. So when I was a kid, it was safe to hitchhike. So one time I had a plan to go to, sounds so ridiculous now when I say it. So I knew these boats left from Galway to go to the United States, or at least I thought they did because we'd been to Galway and I saw these big ships there. So my plan was going to be, I was going to hitchhike to Galway and I was going to somehow smuggle, because on the movies, you know, you like climb up the rope on the side of the ship, right? So I was going to get on the ship and I was going to stow away to the United States. And then I was somehow going to make my way across country. I was saving money for this plan. This plan was in the works. I even left to go hitchhiking, and that just became a small hitchhiking adventure. One thing I'm laughing because it's so ridiculous. So I went hitchhiking and I was gone probably 4 days.
Oh my God, your parents must have been beside themselves.
No, that's what I'm saying, Ben. That's why I'm laughing. I came back from my 4 day hitchhiking trip, walked in the door, and they're like, they acted like I'd been gone for a few hours. It's like nobody noticed I had been fucking gone for 4 days.
Oh my God.
Nobody noticed. I mean, it was a holiday. It was a vacation. When I was a kid, you just opened the door and left for the night. And sometimes we'd come in at night, grab some food and go right to bed, and you wouldn't even see your parents. So I understand with that many kids, I could have slipped under the radar. But in my fantasy, I thought they might even be happy to see me, or at least annoyed that I was gone.
a little bit worried for you.
A little bit worried, and I got back and nobody had noticed I'd left.
Wow, that's stunning.
I mean, I was maybe 13, maybe just about 14.
And so my guess is that probably just underscored that your plan to get out of there was the right plan.
Well, I knew that I had to go, and I knew that they didn't care and they were just absent. And so I got a job at 14 at a restaurant doing pots and pans at a hotel. And it was all about saving money to run away to America.
Wow. So industrious, such a young age.
Well, I needed to go. At the time, I was thinking being homeless in the United States was preferable than staying around here.
So Spencer, then you hatched a plan that ultimately worked. What was it?
I did hatch a plan. I don't know. It's this. Oh, you want to go into the details of that right now?
The plan hatched. Straight ahead when we continue. Spencer's getting serious about making his move as key elements of his plan begin to fall neatly into place.
What happened was I was traveling to Dublin at a place called Dunleary. It's a coastal town in Dublin. And I went into the visitor center. I saw on the wall, it said, come work in the United States for the summer. Ticket paid, insurance paid.
Oh, wow.
And they'll give you a job on a J-1 visa. A J-1 visa was the visa that people who go to summer camps get or come and work for 6 months. And I grabbed this information and I was like, this is it. I have all this money saved. I've made it. This is going to be my plan. But I was 16.
So you're too young to buy a ticket and to leave the country on your own.
Yeah, but you don't even have to buy the ticket. They buy all the tickets. The only thing you have to provide to them is pay them a fee and they arrange everything.
What did you need to be older for?
Because you have to be 18 to go.
You have to be 18 to go.
Over 18. And I wasn't 18, but I was going, man.
Okay, so you didn't have the patience to wait 2 years.
I didn't have it in my heart to wait 2 years. I said, okay, so how could I convince them that I was 18? They're going to need some information. So I didn't have a passport. So I was going through some boxes upstairs one day and I found one of my older brother's birth certificate.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I realized we kind of look alike. And
oh boy.
Yeah.
I see where this is going.
Yeah, you do know where this is going. So I took his passport and it's so ridiculous. Yeah. I put on glasses because I decided they made me look older. I don't think they even had glass in them. I must have looked ridiculous. But anyway, so I took the birth certificate and I went down to this place in Dublin where you get passports. So I took my brother's birth certificate and my photograph and my brother's ID, We kind of looked alike, and I went to apply for a passport.
How'd you get his ID?
Well, you know, he left his wallet around and...
Okay, you just grabbed it.
He didn't use it all the time. I just snatched it, yeah. It was pre-9/11, right? When there was like no security in the world. It would have been mid to late 80s. It was disturbingly easy to get this passport. All I did is, she hardly looked up. I looked at the counter. I handed my brother's birth certificate. I paid her the fee. I gave her my picture. She didn't even look at my ID. And that was it. Now, that was the scary thing, because they had to mail you the passport, right? And when I was a kid in Ireland, there was no mailboxes. They put the mail directly in your door. It was put directly in the little slot that was below the door.
So you're just madly running for the mail every day.
Every day I had to run for that mail. And if there's anything came from my brother, I had to grab it and hide it. I even took some stuff that was just like for him and said, sorry, I opened it. And then eventually I did manage to get the passport. I would run home from school every day to make sure I got the mail first.
Oh my God.
So I got this passport and then I applied to this organization to go to the United States. And I had a passport that identified me as someone who was 19 years old.
Well, this is amazing. And it was so easy. You were probably kicking yourself for not doing it a couple of years earlier.
Yeah, but you know, I was a scrawny little guy. I don't know if I would have passed for 18.
So your timing was just right.
But then I had to apply for this organization. And it's an organization that helps young people get summer jobs in the United States for 6 months to go and work mostly at summer camps. But you can also work in summer camp kitchens. You can also work in theme parks. You can also work in wherever. You could go work in a city. You could do an internship, but you're getting paid. Now, you pay them a fee. They pay for everything, and then they take it out of your salary. You don't make a lot of money for the summer.
But you get a free ticket.
You get a free ticket, like medical insurance, a place to go, a place to live, a job, food. You're going to a place. You're not landing in JFK and saying, what now? You have a place to go.
It's like a dream come true for you.
It was amazing. It was amazing. Exactly what I wanted. And then I realized that the United States don't want you to get that visa without having a reason to come back, which is understandable.
So you have to show that you own some land or you have a job to come back to.
Yeah, or college. Then I thought, oh, cool. I have this passport with my brother's name. And so what I did was I applied to a college program.
Oh my gosh.
And I got accepted. Then I asked them, would you write me a letter saying that I'm starting your college program as of September? And they said yes. And that's all I wanted was the letter, because then that letter is what I used to get my visa.
So clever. So you've got all the pieces in place, just about.
I have my letter saying I'm coming back. I have a passport that says I'm 18. I have a program that's accepted me to go to a summer job. This was it.
So how long did it take them to reply to you that you were accepted?
Right away, within a month and a half. And then they find a placement for you in the United States.
So how did they notify you when you got the position? Did you have to run home and check the mail for that too?
Oh yeah, I guess it was mail too. I do remember getting some phone calls.
But those would all be going to your brother's name.
They did call a few times for my brother, and he was like, what the heck are you even talking about? That did happen for sure.
Okay, but clearly you finessed it.
Yeah, but they just thought it was just a wrong number or something. The offer letter did come in the mail for sure, and I did intercept that. Come on, I was a seasoned pro at intercepting mail at this point, you know?
I see that.
I was even making long-distance calls. Like, remember when making long-distance calls was a big deal?
Yeah, it cost money.
And I was calling the United States from Ireland. That was like £20 an hour at the time. So I was making long-distance calls too, you know, to speak to the place I was going to and stuff like that. And so I had everything in place. I had my letter saying I was coming back. I had my visa, I had my passport. I was 18 years old. I wasn't 18 years old, but...
You had documentation showing it.
Which was disturbingly easy to get, yeah, in the 80s. Of course, the next problem is I want to go away for the summer, right? And I'm 16. I got to make some reason to my family why I'm going to go away for the summer.
Yeah, unless you just decided to disappear in the dead of night.
Well, yeah.
They might not have caught up with you for a few days.
I thought about that. So what I did was, early in the year, I joined the Scouts as a leader. Again, this is all part of the plan, Ben. I knew when you join the Scouts in Ireland, they go away to summer camps all summer. That's why I joined the Scouts. That was my reason. Like, oh, I'm not going to be around this summer. I'm going to go and be a leader at summer camps. There wasn't a lot of quizzing. They didn't really... Nobody was checking up. My family thought that first summer I was in Ireland. And I wasn't.
Oh my gosh. So you just packed up your suitcase. How'd you get to the airport?
I had a friend of a friend who was going to work in Dublin take me.
This is amazing. Were you nervous?
I was nervous. Sure, I was nervous.
Yeah, but you must have
been. I was
been.
Excited. It felt like an adventure. I felt like I was doing like spy stuff.
I'll say. Heart must have been pounding.
Yeah.
Your family didn't try to call you at the camp?
No, they never called. They never would call. No, never would call. I don't think.
Of course not.
They ever checked up on me. When I came back in late September, I think they were like, oh, okay. So how was scout camp? Good. Okay. Great.
So you came back?
Well, yeah. I came back the first year, and then I went again the following summer.
Where did they place you?
In a camp in Iowa.
And how did you like that?
It was great. I'd never tasted pizza before. What's that big bus station in New York called?
Grand Central Station?
Grand Central Station, that's it.
Big train station?
Yeah, right there. And I ordered a big slice of pizza, and that was the first time I tasted pizza.
So you went back?
To Ireland, yeah.
Why did you go back? I thought your plan now at this point was probably going to be just to, you know, assimilate into the U.S. and disappear.
Well, that was my plan.
Head out to Hollywood.
That was my plan, but quickly realized the reality of life when I got there that things cost money, right? Getting to Hollywood is hard. Okay, well, I'm technically under 18, and if I'm gone, my family might start some kind of searching for me. It's hard being 16 and on your own.
Sure, you got scared.
I got scared, yeah. I started to say, well, maybe they're not so bad. So I came back to Ireland.
Nobody knew you'd been out of Ireland.
Nobody knew I'd left the country. They thought I'd gone to a scout camp in Wicklow.
Oh, County Wicklow.
Yeah, County Wicklow.
Mm-hmm. I've been there.
It's beautiful. I hope you went to Waterford too.
Oh yeah, gorgeous seaport to the south.
Yeah.
It must have been so hard to keep it in that you had this tremendous adventure in the United States. Did you tell anybody?
There's no way I could tell or convince anybody that I'd spent the summer in the United States.
Right, they'd probably think you were lying.
Yeah, they probably would. I spent the summer in the United States when you guys all thought I was at scout camp. And I did it again the next summer.
So you did it again. Your passport was still valid. Everything was good. You had all the pieces in place.
I had to reapply for the visa. And so I had to reapply for some other college program to get the letter to say I was coming back.
Right. He had it all figured out at this point. So where did they place you the second time?
The second time they placed me in California.
Oh, boy, that's just right close to where you want to be.
Yeah, that was...
What city did they put you in?
San Bernardino.
Okay, so you're not too far from Hollywood.
That's so close.
About an hour away?
Yeah. So I spent the summer there, and then I went back home again the second time, and the third time...
Oh, my gosh. Wait, so you went back home again?
I came home again, yeah, yeah. I hadn't graduated high school.
Still a little kid.
I was still a kid. I had to go back to high school, right? Was having these great adventures, and nobody knew. I couldn't tell anybody.
That's amazing.
So the third year, I was old enough.
You were 18.
I had one more problem, though. I wanted the credit of being a third-year returner to the program, but I had never attended.
I get it.
It was my brother.
You had to hold up the charade. Your identity had to be your brother, because otherwise you wouldn't get first pick, and you probably wouldn't get to go back to California. You'd probably go back to Iowa or
something. Yeah, they'd probably put me as a beginner. What I tried, and I was surprised that it worked, the person in the head office of the organization, I just told him that I was going by a new name, and he bought it.
I mean, why would you lie about something like that, from his perspective?
Yeah, I'm going by a new name. I changed my name legally or whatever. I can't just say I'm going by a new name because he's going to want to put my legal name on visas and stuff and see what my name is in my passport. So I could prove that I changed my name to him by, any guesses? By showing him my new passport, by my name.
Wow.
Now he has proof.
So in the meantime, you got a passport in your real name.
Yeah.
Wow.
And now I could show him that I changed my name. The third time I went, my plan was to never come back.
It's an audacious plan, right? To leave for the summer, but never come back. There are so many pitfalls, more than I can enumerate in this short tease. So we'll see you in a moment as we continue. Astonishingly, our itinerant Irish teen has managed to work two consecutive summers in the U.S., unbeknownst to anyone at home. Is it at all plausible he could pull it off a third time?
Where was your third placement?
My third placement was in Connecticut. So that was sad because I wanted to go back to California, but the next summer after that, I was still here. I did go to a camp in California for 6 years.
Was there any problem staying? You didn't have the right visa. You had a return ticket. Everybody's expecting you to go back.
Yeah.
So tell me about some of those complications.
There was some complications. I mean, I don't know how to say this lightly, but back in the 90s, the INS is the Immigration Service.
Yeah, Immigration and Naturalization Service.
I forget what they're called now. I would work in restaurants and I'd be cleaning pots and pans, and I was illegal like everybody else in the kitchen.
You were illegal at this point because you had overstayed your visa.
Yes, I overstayed my J-1.
But you were actually here under your real name.
When I overstayed my visa, I was here under my real name. Then I discovered there's a new type of visa called an F1 visa, which is a student visa. So I got that visa. And the problem with that visa is you have to go to school. You have to take classes. So here I was, this kid who barely got out of high school and barely scraped out. I got some D-minuses, and I think some of them were gifts to get rid of me.
You've been accepted to college twice already, though.
Yeah, I have been accepted to more training programs, like certification programs, not really college.
I see.
Kind of like a junior college, but even
okay.
Lower than a junior college. My first few months, I was taking script writing, hiking, yoga, drama, you know, any bullshit I could put down to stay. And then I realized I might as well take some real classes and
right. Actually
get a degree. I graduated with my bachelor's as a 4.0 and my master's degree as a 4.0.
Fantastic.
Became something I did to stay, and then it became something I was really good at.
What kind of work did you end up getting?
What kind of work am I doing? Well,
how did your life turn out?
Yeah.
Or I guess that's a topic for another interview.
It sure turned out great. My hesitation was, I don't know how much revealing information I want to give, but I'm in education. It's ridiculous because my teachers would spin in their graves if they heard that I was a teacher. I didn't go to college for the right reason, but then I discovered I might as well try and get it done, and I did really well.
Well, what an amazing story. Do people in your life now know, you know, how you got to the United States?
No, they don't know all the details. I think most people believe that I just got here when I was really young and I came and somehow this program accepted me when I was younger than 18. And they definitely don't know the details about how I came those first 2 years.
Nobody knows you assumed your brother's identity.
Nobody knows that.
To come over here a couple of times on your scouting missions.
Nobody knows that.
Yeah. And why did you want to tell your secret today then? You've been keeping this secret for so long.
Why do I want to tell my secret today? Why would you ask me that? Because I would have liked to have thought of an answer for that one. I mean, remember I talked about these people that be in our house and that just had this pit in my stomach and how it just didn't feel right to me. It's kind of like that. It just doesn't feel right that I haven't ever verbalized this thing that I did for 2 years. Maybe I need to tell some people in my life.
When we were talking about doing this interview for the podcast, you expressed some concern that, you know, the authorities might be interested in knocking on your door. And what do you fear? I mean, you're here legally.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess I thought that if the basis for me coming here for 2 years mm-hmm. was, you know, not exactly honest, I don't know if it's like a house of cards, if it breaks down everything I've built until now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's more than 25 years ago. To be honest, I definitely took pause about telling this story on your podcast. What's my motivation to put this shameful thing I did out into the world? Why am I doing this, Ben? Why did I tell you?
Yeah, why? Did we get an answer to that?
I don't know. Because now you ask me the question and like, I don't know why I'm doing it. I mean, there's definitely some fear around telling it.
Yeah, I see that.
I think it's fear of being seen as shameful by people. Not fear really of going to jail or losing my visa or anything like that. I think it's just people respect me and this feels like I'm telling them something to not respect me about.
Right. You're an educator.
Yeah.
People hold you as a role model, trust you, and you fear that could maybe disappoint a lot of people in your life if they knew that you had, as a young man, assumed a false identity to enter another country.
Yeah.
This country.
When you say it that way, that's terrifying, yes.
Didn't mean to terrify you.
No.
Trying to verbalize what I think I hear you feeling.
That's it for sure. I came and I worked. I met people who I'm still connected with today. But those people, I don't think they know how old I am. The people from the first summers, I'm saying.
I see that you're still in touch with. So there's a slight age disparity that you've got to... So there's a little part of this lie that has stuck with you.
Yeah, but who...
Your friends from back then think you're 4 years older.
Yeah, but who talks about age anymore when you get into your 40s? Who has birthdays with birthday candles and talks about age, really?
Well, I don't think you're going to.
No, not with them.
Not you.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, so that's sort of a little reminder there, and you sort of got to keep that straight.
For sure.
So, Spencer, there's still one really big question looming for me.
Yeah.
When you came back to the United States for the third time, did your parents know at that time you were going to the U.S., or did they still think you were going to camp in Ireland?
I told them I was going to the United States to work at a summer camp, and they didn't like it. And I was 18, and I said, well, I'm sorry you don't like it. I'll see you later.
The big part that's still missing for me is what happened to your family? You must have told them you were staying here, or did you just forget them?
Well, I stayed in touch a little bit, not very well. And my mother's passed away. We stayed in touch. Definitely we had a labored relationship for years. And when I went that third time, I did not say I was going to the United States forever. I said I was going for 2 months, but I knew I was going forever. I did kind of lie to her about that. That never really sat well. We definitely had a labored relationship. And to this day, I do have a labored relationship with my family, for sure.
You've got 5 brothers and a dad.
Yeah. The only one I really talk to on the phone is my dad, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have other people in my life, you know, who I've picked to be my family, and things are good.
I'm so glad to hear that. I'm glad this story has such a happy ending.
Yeah.
Spencer, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your story.
Thank you, Ben.
So Spencer managed to assimilate into the United States. It was the capstone to a successful mission, carefully executed as a teen in Ireland, to escape turmoil at home. He assumed his brother's identity and boldly applied for visas using enrollment in a trade school he never attended as collateral. And on the third round, he made it stick. But it was just the beginning of his adventures, because Spencer did make it to Hollywood, and it was not pretty.
Coming soon to The Secret Room Unlocked, Ben sits down again with Spencer for an eye-popping peek at the underbelly of show business.
You came to the United States, and I know you wanted to go to Hollywood. Did you get there?
I got to Hollywood, but I knew I needed to get jobs, and that's a whole nother story.
Is it safe to assume Hollywood treated you in a way you didn't expect?
Well, definitely, I wasn't planning on doing the things that I had to do to get the jobs.
Oh boy.
We've gone this far together, Ben, so we're going all the way.
You will have to cover your tender ears, dear listeners. This one's about celebrities and sex parties. It's just too hot for the main feed.
That's Susie Lark, your host for our companion podcast, The Secret Room Unlocked, which is available when you support at patreon.com/secretroom. Spencer sent pictures of his passports and visa, and a picture of himself when he was a kid. See them now on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Secret Room Pod. Our production unit this week is producer Susie Lark and shadow producer Lefty Marcucci. Thanks also to the Street Secret team. Chet is a sound engineer, and our music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Do you have a wackadoodle secret to share? Send it to me at our website, secretroompod.com. Thank you for downloading your favorite indie podcast that could.
This is The Secret Room, a podcast about the stories that no one ever tells.
I'm Ben Hamm.
Pod on.
Pod on.
Perfect. Do you know how to say that in Gaelic?
Say Gaelic, I'd have to look it up.
Oh, do you think pod on's in the dictionary? I don't know.
Yeah. I can say goodbye and thank you in Gaelic, for
okay,
sure.
Okay, yeah, do it. That'd be great.
Okay, are you ready?
Yep.
Slán leath agus gur míle maith agat.
Wow, that's cool.
That's goodbye and thank you in Gaelic.
That's great. Can you say subscribe and then on iTunes in English? How would you say?
Lushtal ana iTunes.